If you are looking for lingerie, swimwear, clubwear, dresses, jewellery, Halloween costumes, and so much more, check out Too Posh Boutique. Find us online on Instagram or at tooposhboutique.com. You can also call for a private fitting appointment at 469-682-1240. Do you need an item custom created? We have our own production team ready to help. Are you interested in a fun and sexy gift basket? Look no further. We create those too. We also carry a large collection of diva-sized products. Get poshed at Too Posh Boutique. We cannot wait to meet you. Tooposhboutique.com or call us at 469-682-1240.
Welcome to the Too Posh Podcast.
I am Gabrielle. I am a former New York Mafia princess, originally from Austria. I am the mother of three and the owner of Too Posh Boutique. And here with my beautiful co-host, Marcella, my daughter.
Hello, I'm Marcella. I'm a dancer, choreographer, model, and designer for Too Posh. And I say whatever the fuck I want, and I cannot wait to talk to Leighton.
How you doing? I'm Leighton. I'm a musician, singer, songwriter. I'm a model. I'm just out here having a good old time. One of God's boys.
I am Polly. I am a certified sexual health consultant and educator, former professional dominatrix, currently working at the largest adult novelty store in the Texas Panhandle.
What will they say next? Welcome to the Too Posh Podcast.
All right. Welcome, everyone, to our Too Posh Podcast. I'm Gabrielle, and I'm your host, along with my beautiful daughter, Marcella.
Hello.
And DJ Spider.
Hello.
And today we have a beautiful guest that we love very much and we hold very dear to our heart. She is one of our Too Posh models, actually, and it is Kiri Barnes. Is it still?
It's Kiri Barnes now.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Kiri Barnes, who people listen to her story. I am so excited she's here and she is brave enough to share her story and her title of her show, I already have it, which I usually don't have it until we record it and everything. But she's turning her mess into a message today. And
I like that too.
She is going to tell us a little bit all about, like, where did you grow up? How did you grow up? Give us a short synopsis of, like, your childhood, teen years, and so forth.
Oh, dear. Growing up, it was, I would say, dysfunctional. My parents were together up until the age of 9, but there was a lot of arguing in the house, a lot of fighting, a lot of drinking.
On both?
On my dad's
side.
Yeah. And so I didn't, actually, surprisingly, my mom at the age of 27 became a single mom, and she worked 3 different jobs.
How many kids were there now?
There was 2. It was me, who was the oldest, and then my brother, who was, he's about 2 years younger than I am. And then he, you know, he was just a little old guy when we were going through it. But my mom, bless her heart, she was having a hard time, you know. So she would drop us off at my grandmother's house for months at a time. To the point, you know, we're at one point in time, my brother, you know, would start calling my aunt mom. So going back to childhood memories, like, I don't recall a lot with my parents, but I do recall a lot with my grandparents. So a lot with my mom's side and a lot with my dad's mom, because we're, you know, either with, you know, in Idaho with my mom's side, or we're in Oregon with my dad's side.
Oh, wow. So it was different states.
Yeah.
And so you wouldn't even see your mom.
Well, I mean, I was littler. I mean, I do recall seeing her, but I mean, there are certain things that you kind of just kind of block out, I think, as a child. I just, most of my wonderful memories as a kid are with my grandmas, just my grandmas. So it's funny because, you know, a lot of people are like, what do you remember as a kid? I'm like, well, I don't remember a lot. I just remember spending a lot of time with each of my grandmothers.
I did too, actually.
Yeah. So wonderful, wonderful memories to have. It's just you wish you had better memories with your parents.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
But, you know, we went through a lot as kids. We did. We saw a lot of things that kids should not normally see.
Like and, what?
Just the whole like abuse stuff, you know?
Your dad abused your mom?
See, it's not like that. It's more like just the arguing between them.
Mm-hmm. Which can be abusive.
Yeah. I mean, emotionally in your mind as a child, you don't know how to process that. Never did we see like physical abuse.
Okay.
But it was just emotional abuse and, you know, not understanding why divorce is taking place and all of those things. And so I think the older we got, the more we became aware of like the situation. And my mom was, you know, she dated a lot of men. I think because she was lost herself, trying to find herself as a woman and being married for so long, for almost 10 years. She just kind of wanted to figure out like what made her happy. And I think she always needed a man.
Mm-hmm.
And growing up, seeing that, you kind of, it's kind of like kids are, they're like sponges.
Yeah.
So they reciprocate everything that they're seeing. And you don't really understand that, you know.
Until.
You don't understand until you're older.
Until later.
So when I got into my teens, I decided at the age of 15, because we moved a lot. That was another thing that was really, really hard.
I can't even imagine that, actually.
We moved a lot. We went to like pretty much 6 different schools in 5 years. So we were always the new kids. And I was always the new girl. So I struggled a lot, especially in high school, because girls were not nice to me.
Because you're beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. And, you know, just I felt like, you know, I never fit in.
Mm-hmm.
I never had the nice stuff, you know, that kids had in school. Because my mom couldn't afford a lot, you know, bless her heart. She worked really hard as a single mom. But I just, you know, had hand-me-downs and a lot of things from the thrift store. And I was very grateful, don't get me wrong. But kids are so nasty.
Mean.
They're so mean and they're so judgmental. And they would just bring you down because if you didn't dress a certain way, if you didn't look a certain way, you were automatically placed in this category, which right. I think is so sad.
Mm-hmm.
So switching schools so many times and always being the new girl, it creates like this, almost just like this image problem with yourself. Like you have self-image issues. And I decided at the age of 15, when we finally moved back to Washington, I was like, I'm done moving.
I've decided
I need stability. I'm in high school now. I don't want to be the new girl anymore. Like, I'm tired of girls treating me awful. I'm tired of, you know, seeing my name written on bathroom stalls.
What?
Yeah, girls were horrible.
What would they say?
Do
you remember?
I do remember. I remember literally sitting down in the bathroom stall trying to pee, for God's sakes. And you're just like looking to your left and there's like this writing and it said, Kiri is a bitch. And I was just like, whoa, I was a nice person to everybody. Like yeah. I got along with everybody. Like that's just how my mom raised us. You know, make sure you respect people and treat people the way you want to be treated. Mm-hmm. And I really took that to heart, and that's how I was as a, you know, a teenage girl. And I think it affected me a lot because, again, it's that fitting in. You want to feel accepted and, mm-hmm. you know, not seeing my dad as much as I'd like to growing up. It takes a toll on you because you need that.
Mm-hmm.
You need that. And if you don't have it, it affects you as a woman.
Right.
And so I decided to live with my father at 15. Wow. And my brother lived with my mother because my mom and I weren't really seeing eye to eye at the time. And so that was interesting. That was very interesting because that's the time I kind of struggled with myself and I was just lost. I was lost living with my dad. You know, it was an interesting experience to say the least, you know.
Like in what way?
Well, he's, you know, we only got to see him like once, maybe twice a year. So the relationship was not like it would be if you saw your dad every day.
Time.
Yeah. So that was
now
hard.
A 15-year-old
and you're trying
girl.
To build a relationship.
Yeah, exactly. And so trying to come to him and, you know, explain I'm having a hard day. This is what happened to me. It doesn't really go over so well, especially when they're not understanding about you as a developing woman.
Mm-hmm. I can't imagine that's difficult.
It's very difficult. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I went through a phase where I became depressed and just lost myself, like I said, and, you know, experimented early in drinking. And, you know, I learned soon, probably by the age of 17, I got into a really abusive relationship with someone that I thought I was going to be with for a very, very long time. Well, I think that was because I felt accepted in a way, but the abuse kind of kept me at this victim mentality.
What kind of abuse was that?
It was extremely emotionally abusive, verbal abusive, not so much physical.
I feel like the emotional is worse.
Oh, absolutely. It destroys like who you are, like mm-hmm. as a person.
And it's very confusing.
Absolutely.
It's very subtle at first. So I think the emotional is almost worse.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. So, I mean, getting in that relationship and I decided at 17 that this isn't me. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be this person that drinks and goes to parties. And I didn't do it all the time, but it was enough for me to be like, this is not who I want to be. Like, just because you grow up and you have your parents raise you a certain way, or you're watching your parents do certain things, does not mean that's who you are as a person. That doesn't define you. And I learned very, very shortly, I'm like, I want to be different.
Yeah.
I want to like literally break the chain, break the mold and do something different.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And I lost all my friends.
Okay, partying.
I lost all my friends because I wasn't partying. And I was just like, wow, really? You know, that was a huge, like, it was a shock to me, because mm-hmm. I was just like, why would you want to like not be friends with someone because you're not partaking in the party life? Well, you know, that's your loss. Mm-hmm. So I felt lonely for a while growing up, and being in this abusive relationship for 4 years, and I learned a lot about myself, and I finally came to the point where, you know, I was engaged at 18.
Oh, you got engaged.
Yeah, I was engaged at 18 because I was like, this is my way out.
Oh.
That's how you were breaking the chain.
This is my way out. Like, this is the way I'm going to, like, you know, be able to get away. But then something kind of inside of me, because I've always had faith. Faith has always been a part of my life. And it was very, very new in my faith then. But it was almost like something inside of me is like, no, this isn't right. Like, monkey see, monkey do doesn't mean it's monkey right. You know what yeah. I mean? Like, it doesn't mean that it's right. It doesn't mean that you need to follow in the footsteps of the things that you've witnessed. And I ended that. And it was, you think in the moment, it's the hardest thing, you know, you're ever going to do. But it was the best thing I ever did.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided at 18, going on 19, that I was ready to leave the nest. I was done. And I was ready to live my life. So I packed 2 suitcases and I got in a plane and I came to Texas.
What made you pick Texas?
My aunt.
Oh, okay.
My aunt. Yeah, she lives over here with my aunt and uncle.
So you came to Dallas?
I did. The same area that, yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. And you had told her you wanted to move here and she said, okay, mm-hmm. okay.
Yeah. It was kind of like, you know, spreading your wings. Mm-hmm. There's no better place to spread your wings. I felt like I needed a restart, you know. So yeah. I came here and I was here for a while. I helped my aunt teach dance for 9 months because she owned a hip hop dance ministry here. And so that was a really, really important time in my life because I grew a lot, not only as a woman, but in my faith.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of in a nutshell, like my youthful right. years. But
well, Carrie and I have matching tattoos, by the way.
You do?
Yes. Your wrist says, or her arm says, let go and let God.
Let me yeah. see.
And my rib cage says, let go and let God.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
That was the first thing when I first met her. Oh. We had our little princess party or
yeah.
whatever. Mm-hmm. I was like, I have that same one. So I thought that was really cool.
That is
fun
cool.
Fact.
Yeah.
Right?
Fun
fact.
So take us, what happened next?
So next season of my life, I was living here in Dallas and
how old are you now?
20 going on 21.
Okay.
Yeah. And I was currently seeing somebody at the time and, you know, fell in love.
Yeah.
And it was somebody that I knew from high school. And, you know, you think, wow, you know, maybe this is meant to be, you know.
High school from
like, did you go to high school in Dallas before?
No, this was back in like Oregon, Washington, when I was like in between Washington, transferring over to Oregon.
But now you're living in Dallas.
Yes. So and I'm he still was in here Texas. Too? He was in a different state.
Oh, he was in a different state.
Yeah. So he ended up moving over here, you know, and we got engaged.
How fast?
It wasn't as, we dated in high school, so it wasn't like it was like, we've met 2 weeks and we're engaged. No, we knew each other for a while, but I just kind of felt like, you know, wow, he's always been the person that I saw myself with, and I fell head over heels in love with this person and thought he was the most amazing person ever, and, you know, he moved over here, and we got engaged, and we decided that, okay, well, we don't want to get married here per se, so let's move back. So we moved to Washington, drove all the way across the U.S., which was an interesting experience in itself. We lived there for the next, 5-6 months? Because we were planning the wedding. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it was a fun time, and we planned it in almost 6 months. Because we wanted, I wasn't wanting like a drawn out like engagement. Like, mm-hmm. I wanted to like get it done. I get it done. And so we did. And it was, you know, it was everything that we had planned for and wanted. And we were happy. And we got married. It was in December. So it was a Christmas wedding. I just wanted something very pretty and whimsical and all of that. And things, you know, were okay for a while, and then things shortly started to go in a very, very weird direction. It's like you think you know somebody, and then it takes like a complete 180.
Like what happened?
What happened?
Did you have any children at this time?
No, I didn't.
Okay.
So I wanted to do it the right way.
Right.
You know, I wanted to do it the right way and get married and then have kids. Mm-hmm. But it wasn't, it was actually until I became pregnant almost five months into marriage. And that was like a huge blow up. You want it to be exciting. Yeah. You want it to be like this beautiful celebration moment. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And instead it was, it's just hard to go back there. It's like, wow. Instead it was like, I'm not ready for kids.
You might want to have told me that before we got married.
You got pregnant on purpose. This isn't my child. This is what I mean. And it took a 180. I was like, wait a minute.
Were you so shocked? Like, did you tell him, like, in the moment, did you tell him, like, really excited? Like,
oh, I mean, yes, I was excited. I was scared. Right. I mean, I was 21. I was young.
Yeah.
I was a baby.
Yeah.
I didn't even, like, I had dreams and stuff I wanted to pursue. Like, I had done singing and modeling for 12 years, and that's kind of the direction I wanted my life to go in. And, you know, obviously God had other plans and other, you know, intentions for my life, and a baby in the mix of it. It was a beautiful thing. It was something to be excited about, something to be, you know, it's a blessing.
Mm-hmm.
But to have that be the initial reaction, it's like, whoa, what the heck is going on here? You know, that's
so that was the initial, like the second you told him, that's how he reacted.
It was literally, there was really no excitement. It was kind of like, what? We talked about this. We weren't going to get, you know, we weren't going to be having kids until this long down the road because I'm focused on my career. And I'm like, I'm sorry. It takes two to tango.
Oh, yes. Like, he does know how this happens, right?
Yeah. I mean, we're married. I mean, you're excited and you're newlyweds, things are bound to happen. But it was like, well, you went off birth control on purpose, and that's not it at all. Like, my body, I was on birth control from the age of 12 because my mom put me on it at a very, very young age because I had the most excruciating painful cramps and periods. And so she was just like, well, the doctor said if we do this, it'll help, you know, mm-hmm. even you out, and it'll make things a little bit more comfortable. So I did. I was on it for a long time, and I guess from what the doctor said is, like, your body just stops sometimes. Like, it almost, like, rejects it or just doesn't do what it should after so long.
Yeah, you build up a tolerance.
Yeah,
sure. I was trying to think of the word.
Tolerance. Yeah, so I started having issues, you know, women issues. And I was like, what is wrong with me? And they said, well, you've been on, you know, this birth control for so long. Like, this is kind of what could be happening. Your body just isn't reacting the way. Yeah. Mm. And so, yeah, we're married. I mean,
right.
You're married. It's not like you're just with somebody, you know. Right. We just took vows like before, like 5-6 months before.
Right.
I was excited, you know, but when I had saw the reaction, like, that I was just like, wait a minute, like, this isn't what I ever pictured my life to be. This is not, you know, how marriage should be, or, you know, just I think the way I was treated in that moment, I never anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
Especially being accused, well, this baby isn't mine, you know. And I'm like, what in the world? Like, I am not an unfaithful person. I never have been.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was a lot for me to take in, because I didn't know how to feel about the pregnancy.
Right.
You know, deep down inside, you know, wow, I'm excited. You know, this is my first baby. There's all these firsts.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just, I think you just never see that coming. And then that's when things really started to kind of uproar their ugly heads. And certain sides of a person I started to really see, like, and it was scary.
Like what?
Like, 3 months, you know, into being pregnant, and, you know, we'd take a trip and we go to a Vegas for the first time, you know. This was my second time, because the first time I went for an audition, but the second time I couldn't do anything, you know, I'm pregnant. So even being in the casinos as they were, they're so smoky, mm-hmm. and you can't partake in anything. So you feel sick, and I'm already in this sick period of, like, I feel so, like, nauseous, and I just kind of want to, like, do nothing.
Yeah.
But I tried to be a good sport about it, and I just didn't want to be around the smoke. And I think anybody in the right mind can understand that if you're pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
So it just wasn't until I had I wasn't complaining. It was just like, I don't want to be in there. I don't want to go on this casino. I don't feel good. I don't feel like it's good for my baby. Like, hello. And that sparked a huge, huge argument. And I was told that I was an effing bitch because I didn't want to. Pretty much I was the bad guy because I didn't want to partake in the fun and the drinking. Obviously, I couldn't even drink. It's like, so why would you even say that to me? And so I felt very, very, like, alone, mm-hmm. real quick. Like, this, I wouldn't say it was depression, but it was just like, where is my life going? Like, this is not how someone should treat your
pregnant wife,
right? This is just insane to me. And so ended up going back to the hotel, and there was obviously heavy drinking, you know, that he had been doing. And it was just me trying to express myself, like, this isn't right. Like, I'm sorry, I don't want to partake in, you know, you're gambling with, you know, friends and family, but I don't feel very good, you know, and if I'll come back and stay at the hotel, it's like, it shouldn't be an issue. And
it's like you're making him stop.
Yeah. So, I mean, that escalated really, really quickly. It really, really quickly. And I can remember, like, as if it was yesterday, just sitting on the bathtub trying to explain that, and him, like, it was almost like he snapped. And he just, it's almost like he saw just red. And I'm upset because he's yelling and he's being just, like, verbally, emotionally abusive. And I'm like, this isn't right. Like, this isn't okay. You don't treat people like this. I don't care how mad you get. Like, it's a choice. Mm-hmm. It's a choice to treat someone like garbage. It's a choice to be respectful. It's a choice to not say anything at all just because you may create damage. Like, why? And so that escalated into grabbing me by the shoulders and kind of, not like shaking me, but enough to where I almost fell in the bathtub, and then me, like, trying to get away and, like, taking me and, like, throw me on the bed at 3 months pregnant. And this is something that I haven't told very many people. Like, so this is like you were saying, Marcella, it's like memory lane, like, you're reliving everything. And it's mm-hmm. like, people would never ever think that he would be, you know, capable of something like that, or
right.
he would never admit that he was ever, you know, that way. But it's like, no, these are in my head. This is what happened. I can relive it as if it happened 2 seconds ago. And this is what happened.
Well, and a lot of people are confused about what abuse is, I think. Mm-hmm. Like, well, I grabbed her, but that I didn't hit her, or I didn't slap her, or I didn't punch her. Or even the confusing thing with verbal abuse. I think that it gets very, like, there's a lot of things are abusive, like, mm-hmm. just by what you say. And I think when a grown man grabs a woman's shoulders and even not like shakes them like shaking baby, but like grabs them like this, that is scary.
Oh, absolutely. Well, you don't know.
Yeah.
It's like fight or flight mode. You yeah. go into like, what's going to happen? Like, why would you ever put your hands on a woman?
Your pregnant wife.
Exactly. yeah. Let alone like throw her on the bed while she's pregnant and then sit there and say that you didn't do anything mm-hmm. when yes, you did.
Right.
You know, and then lying to the family that nothing ever happened and then disappearing till who knows how long. And I'm in the room bawling and crying, wanting to get on a plane like and go home mm-hmm. because it's just you didn't feel safe. And that marriage, you're supposed to feel safe. Mm-hmm. You know, you're supposed to feel protected. Mm-hmm. And especially when you're pregnant, you're newly pregnant. It's your first pregnancy. I mean, there's so many different risks involved for the first 3 months. So you never know.
But it's also you're newly married. I mean, you would think that the person you're married to is kind, loving, caring. Mm-hmm. And then especially when you're pregnant, even more kind, loving and caring.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when this kind of stuff happens, then it has to be super confusing.
Oh, absolutely.
And so take us further than when he did come home after disappearing.
It was just a very awkward, like, silence mm-hmm. between the two of us and me having to almost be the one to apologize.
Of course.
It's just like that whole abuse, like, you're the bad guy, you're the one that did this, and I can do no wrong, and I never did this, or... They just, it's a belittling mind effing game. And mm-hmm. it's so sick now looking back on it, like, why in the world? But when you start going through that, you want to fix them. You mm-hmm. want to make it better. You want to mend that Band-Aid in any way you can because that's your heart naturally. And it was an awkward next day. You know, we tried to have fun, but all I could replay in my head was what happened is if he's capable of something like that, what else? And I mean, I'm pregnant, so this isn't even me not being pregnant. So what else could happen if I was to make him angry?
So take us a little bit further. Were there more incidents?
So there was a couple more. It wasn't always that way, but it was enough to be like, this is wrong. Mm-hmm. You know, and it always had escalated when there was drinking involved. Mm-hmm. Drinking was like the thing that had been the reason, I don't know, behind the abuse. But being in an argument about, you know, a friend that, you know, had been doing something. He was hanging out with some friends. And, you know, as a woman, intuitively, you're like, well, he's not the greatest guy for you to be hanging around with. Maybe right. not the greatest influence because you see those things.
Right.
And I'm a very intuitive person. I'm a very, like, spiritual person, too. So I can feel energy yeah. and stuff like that. And I have since I was little. But, you know, drinking was involved. And I just said, I don't know, like, I just don't think it's a good idea. And that escalated into, again, like being pushed on the ground and almost hitting my head off a table. And then him freaking out saying, why did you throw yourself on the ground? It's like, why the hell would I throw myself on the ground?
For fun.
You know, so I like
for
to
the
that.
Record, real quick, I have luckily never been in an abusive relationship and I've never ended up on the ground. So
I don't throw myself on the ground often either.
You don't need to throw yourself no, on the ground.
No. And so it's kind of like hearing someone come at you like that and you're just like, what? Really? Like, you just did that. Like, mm-hmm. how do you not like put two and two together? And you're laying on the ground bawling like, this is not happening. Like, what happened?
Yeah.
Like, what happened? It's like, why all of a sudden now you decide to like, come out in this person. It's almost like living with a split personality per se. And so, you know, that was an instance. And another one, you know, fast forward, it wasn't until because I had my son and then moved.
How was the birth? I mean, was he supportive then?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was like none of that ever happened, you know. Oh, he is my son. He looks just like me. Well, yeah. Like, it's just stupid stuff. And so the birth was great. You know, I had to have a cesarean, emergency cesarean, because he came a month early, which was not planned. Mm-hmm. So it was scary, you know, but I think for the most part, it was kind of smooth considering it was my first big surgery. And that is scary at first for some people.
But he was supportive at this point.
Yeah, he was supportive.
So then take us further. Like, did you get pregnant again?
So I was trying, well, he was, let me see here, like tracking through my head. It was 9 months old. So 9 months later, I was pregnant with my second one.
Now, how did that go over?
That was better. Oh. Believe it or not, it was more accepting. It was like, oh, I'm going to be excited about this, you know?
Well, that's good.
But mind you, in between all of this, he started taking on smoking pot. And so that would kind of like be his even keel to like bring him from one point down to like this, I'm cool. Yeah. Like, I feel better. Like, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. And so I was dealing with that, and that was a new thing. I didn't know how to respond to that because I was like, I didn't ever want to like burst his bubble, you know, or say anything because I didn't want to get yelled at. I didn't want to ever start a fight. Like, I hated, I don't like arguing because obviously I grew up like seeing stuff like that. So lo and behold, you know, he was awesome about it at the time, you know, and then it wasn't until like we had just gotten a house and the house was beautiful and you know, we ended up actually quickly losing that house because of job choices. He was with a job that was really, really bad, and a lot of bad things were happening. And it was kind of like everything happened so fast. You know, I had just gotten her room ready, and I was excited. And we had transitioned from that place where he was using heavier, like, pot to the point where, like, it was, I'm going to be gone, you know, because I was working full time and, you know, he was working. So we come home and he would be in a horrendous, horrendous mood, like not talk. You just don't even talk to him. Like, you can just tell, like, don't say anything. And then
to the toxic, like a house that's so stressful.
Oh, absolutely. To the point where it's like, I'm going to go out in the garage because we transitioned to a townhouse. It was a 3-story townhouse. We go in the garage, get my fix, and then, oh, how are you? You're so beautiful. Like, how was your day? And it was like Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde all the time. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. I don't want my kids growing up in this atmosphere. This is toxic, not only for me, but for them, because they're seeing all of this. Mm-hmm. Whether they remember this or not, it's still something as a mother, like, you don't want to feel like you're responsible because you didn't leave sooner, or, you know, right, they saw this, so they turn out that way. There's things that are always on the back of your mind.
Now, really quick, do you have contact with your mom and your dad at this time? Like, do they see the grandkids?
So, yeah, they did. My mom actually was, she decided to live with us for a little bit. She was kind of going through some hardships in her life at the time. So I thought it was great to have my mom come in and help with the kids. And she could see it. And she would always tell me, you need to, this is not okay. You need to leave. Like, this isn't healthy for the kids. And then her and him would always argue, or he would call her certain things. And it was awful. It was awful. And the kids were part of this. Mm-hmm. Like, so you start to realize, especially, I think it was the last week. I'm trying to, like, not go too ahead of myself. But it was the last week before I decided to make a really, really big choice for myself and the kids. But it was like, he comes home, he's in that mood, and I just got sick of it. I'm like, I'm done. It's either me or the family. Like, it's either that or it's the family. Make a choice, because I'm not going to live like this anymore, and they're not going to grow up learning these things and seeing this. And so I was like, I'm so sick of this. I know where you're hiding it, because as a woman, you find things,
right?
You're hiding it on, and you don't want to say anything. And the minute I said, I'm going to go in the garage and throw it away, it was like a stampede, like, came down the stairs, like, in 2 seconds and was flying at me. And quickly, I was pinned up against the back, like, the garage door, and, like, almost held up against it. Don't you ever effing throw that away. And it was like looking into the eyes of a demon, almost. Just very demonic. And that's when I knew I can't do this anymore.
Yeah.
And that wasn't the straw that broke the camel's back, but that was like, you are so capable of hurting me. Because if you're going to get upset about something that should be like the lowest of your priorities,
right,
then there's a problem. And I think it was not even a couple days later after that, we got in some stupid argument because he was very like, he liked to start arguments almost. I don't know if he tried to like pick fights, you know, and I called him out on things too, because I was just at a place where I'm like, I'm done. I'm tired.
Yeah.
And he, there was so many things that had escalated up to that. And I just became to this no tolerance point. I'm like, I'm not going to do this anymore. And he was like, you know what, if you want to be done, just be done. And I was just like looking at him like,
yeah,
wow, okay. He's like, just get the fuck out of my effing life, you know. And I was like,
okay.
And he left, and I literally never looked back. I packed my stuff up as much as I could, the kids, and I called my grandmother, who lived, you know, about 5 minutes away from me, and I told her what was going on. I said, I'm done. This is enough. This is toxic. This is abusive. Like, my kids have been through enough. They've seen enough. It's affecting them. It's affecting me. I've completely, like, lost myself,
mm-hmm.
you know, as a person, as a woman.
And how old are your kids? And how long had you been married at this point that it was over? And how long? How old are your children?
So I was married almost 5 years.
Okay.
And together almost 6. And the kids were 1 and 2.
Okay.
At this point.
So little.
Yeah, so they're little.
Mm-hmm.
And so I literally packed my car up to the gills and was at my grandma's house, and we shared a tiny, tiny, tiny bedroom, and I put a crib in there, and my son and I shared a bed, and I filed for divorce. And I was like, I will no longer be the rug you wipe your feet on.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot treat people like that. And, you know, of course, going through that, you know, he was like, she had an affair on me. That's why we got divorced. And I was like, what?
Oh, he said you did.
Yes. But lo and behold, like, I had found out not long, even before the last, you know, what the straw that broke the camel's back, is there was infidelity involved. And he was very open about it. And he told me it was about 4 or 5 different times that it had happened. In the instances I felt that something wasn't right.
Of course, because the intuition.
Yeah, you're like, no, that's a lie. Like, yeah, something's going on. Mm-hmm. And he told me exactly what happened, where it was, and who it was with. And like, I knew it.
Yeah.
Like, no.
Now, was he upset that you filed for divorce and left? Or did he, were you both just kind of like?
I think he was shocked,
mm-hmm.
Because I think it was, once you're in that like cycle of abuse, it's kind of like that control they have. Mm-hmm. They're going to go out and do what they want to do.
And you can't say anything.
You can't say anything because you're the bad guy if you do.
Mm-hmm.
But then again, they want to keep you around.
Right.
It's like having your cake and eat it too, mm-hmm. you know. And here you are suffering from all of these mental things. Like, am I really a bad person? Like, I completely like lost who I was, mm-hmm. as a woman. Like, you're not good enough. Like, no man is ever going to want you. Who's going to want you with kids? Like,
yeah,
all these ugly thoughts go through your head and you're like, wait a minute, this isn't true. Like, these are not truth. And you have to really kind of like find yourself in the midst of that hurt.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was, you know, explaining, because we had to still try to talk. But even trying to talk, it was like talking to a wall a lot of the time. And I, you know, started documenting everything from that point on. Because I was like, I'm done. I'm done you lying to everybody. I'm done with you spreading horrible rumors around about me around town when I'm not that type of person. Like, you're mm-hmm. trying to jeopardize my integrity. And this is ridiculous. Like, I've been nothing but a faithful wife, a devoted mother, like hardworking, you know, when I was working. Because for the last 9 months before that, I wasn't working. I was staying home with the kids to take care of them. And so.
And that's working.
Well, that, you know what I mean? Like, physically going out and working. And being a stay-at-home mom is a lot of work. Mm-hmm. Don't get me wrong. But I was always told that I wasn't doing enough.
Of course. Mm-hmm.
You're not doing enough. You just mm-hmm. get to stay home, you know? So you get in that mindset like, wow, maybe I'm not doing enough. You feel guilty because you are home. So you got to clean the house some more, you know, go over, above and beyond to make this person satisfied. Mm-hmm. When really they're going out and doing things.
Cheating.
It's just, it's a horrible cycle. You don't ever, I think, to see yourself go through that. I mean, you would never, taking vows, obviously, you take vows before God because it's a forever commitment. And mm-hmm. so you would never think that person would be capable of mm-hmm. all of that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, the whole divorce made me stronger. I will tell you that. I had to buck up real quick. And I was working, you know, 2 to 3 jobs to provide. And I, in that season, even I was still trying, being beaten down and, he was lying to the kids and telling the kids I was a horrible mother and just awful things, things that you would never want someone to say about you, you know. And right, he was with someone real quick right after that, you know. And
didn't she look just like you?
No, actually, no, 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 no.
Okay, maybe I'm.
No, she didn't. And I think that was hard for me too, because I was like, wow, okay.
That was fast. Quick.
It was very quick. But then again, I was like, that kind of doesn't surprise me.
Yeah.
And they're going to learn really fast who this person is, because I learned throughout this process he's a very narcissistic, sociopathic type of person.
Totally self-centered from what it sounds like.
Yeah. And he believed his own lies. He believed the lies he told people. And so he can do no wrong in anybody's eyes.
Yeah.
So he thinks.
Right.
But it wasn't until I started to stand up and be like, no, this isn't happening. Like, I'm so sick and tired of your lies. Like, you need to start taking responsibility for the things that you've done and you haven't.
Yeah.
Because it's my fault all the time. But no,
yeah.
Like, that's not going to happen from now on. And so I was with my grandparents' house for 5 months. And then I had another opportunity open up and I was able to move into a really nice home. You know, it was a temporary situation, but I felt so like God was opening doors for me. Mm-hmm. It was like, that's enough. One door is closed. Because, you know, divorce takes time. And I'm still trying to, like, keep the peace among us so we can still see the kids. And I'm trying to focus on myself because it's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. And then, you know, we move into this house and one thing led after the next, and it was always something with him. It was always, this is my fault, you know, you're doing this wrong, and you're a terrible mother. Or the kids would come home, and they would tell me that, oh, he said that you don't love us anymore.
My
gosh. It's just like, I sit here, and I've looked back on all my documentation, because I would document everything daily, because I really think it's so helpful.
It's very important, actually. Everyone tells this today. Like, if you're in a abusive relationship of any kind, to document, document, document.
Because absolutely.
That helps a lot.
Well, the crazy thing is you don't remember.
Yeah.
You don't remember. You do recall the big incidences, I think, but you don't remember maybe the little things that hurt.
Right.
And so going through pages and pages of documentation from 2011 on, it's like you're reading that and you're like, oh my gosh.
Mm-hmm. It's way worse than I remember. Wow.
No, absolutely. Because you're still in that abusive mindset of like, you know, I don't know, like, what happened? And did I do something wrong? Did I make the right choice? Because you really question yourself through divorce. You know, I ended up just like my parents, divorced, and I always told myself I never wanted to end up like my parents. And so it's hard. It's hard. But I think once I got this opportunity to move into this place, it was kind of like my time to shine and step up. And I was juggling. I was working for Mac. I had gotten an opportunity with them, and it was like the dream job for me.
You love makeup. You're a makeup artist.
Yes, I love makeup. And it was hard. I had to interview 2 to 3 different times, you know, to get the job, but I did. And I felt so blessed. Mm-hmm. So I was, you know, working at that and trying to just be a better artist and provide. You know, and then I was working on the weekends as a cocktail waitress at one of the country bars. Mm-hmm. So I was juggling. I'd work from, like, you know, whatever, 9 o'clock till like 10, and then go from the bars from 10 till like 2 in the morning.
And this is all Dallas.
Well, this was in Oregon.
Oh, okay.
Because we had moved back.
Okay.
Yeah. And so my mom, she asked if she can move in with me. And I was like, oh my gosh. This is a great opportunity to reestablish our relationship, you know, because we kind of had gotten off on the wrong foot when I moved in with my dad. I mean, we still stayed in touch. And I was like, this is great, because she's going to be able to be a part of the kids' life. She loves the babies, like, they're her whole world. And she did. She moved in, and it was the best choice, you know, that we had made together. And I would work all day long. And my mom, you know, she would clean the house. She would run errands. She'd take care of the kids. She'd have dinner ready when I got home. And the kids would be bathed, in bed, prayer said, and sleeping. So it was like this peace, because she already knew it was chaotic going through the divorce and things that I was dealing with. And so that was like such a beautiful time in my life. It was like what I look forward to, you know, was her. And then going to her and talking to her about things that were happening, because, you know, he would come over and these crazy things would happen and he'd be drunk or something and he would lash out and tell my son, you know, that your mom's an effing slut, stuff like that to your 3-year-old. And it's just like, you don't say that. Or, you know, someone, I went on one date, granted, and it had been a long
You're
time.
You're divorced, that's okay.
Yeah, I went on one date and he's like, why don't you just call him daddy? You know, telling my son this. And it's just like,
I was there
like watching this. And it's just like, no. So trying to like get him out. And like get rid of that problem. It was a big problem. It was toxic. And trying to talk to my mom, you know, he was very, I'm going to, you know, kill myself.
Oh, and God.
This is where I'm going to do it. This is when I'm going to do it. This is how I'm going to do it.
That's my favorite. The crying and the I want to die. Mm-hmm.
And so it was just trying to deal with that. And, you know, you need to go look for him. You know, what happens if he does it, you know? So you're still trying to, like, battle this if he does. You know, maybe it's on me because I knew about it, blah, blah, blah. But it wasn't until, like, my mom, you know, she was like, this is enough. And she even tried talking to him, you know? And I was dealing with so much at the time. It was just chaos. So I was trying to find balance and peace amongst all of it. Because I didn't want my kids to be exposed to something like that.
So take us a little bit further. What happened next?
So I had a, oh dear. My mom was living with me for 7 months. And I could tell something was off. You know, something wasn't right. My mom was a beautiful, beautiful woman.
Beautiful.
She really was. And her look started to change. And she started to get scabs periodically on her arms and on her face. And she always would tell me that there were some mosquito bites. And she would always cover them with Band-Aids. And I intuitively knew something wasn't right. Because the guy that she was seeing off and on for, you know, the last 3-4 years did drugs. And so... And the reason I knew that, too, is because, you know, rewind back to my wedding, she was kind of into stuff like that. She had a whole bunch of tinfoil with her at the time. And she was in the bathroom doing stuff. And you could tell. And she almost didn't make it to the wedding. I know I'm rewinding back then. But it's important to know, like, this is kind of where it started. And so I knew something wasn't right. Like, something's not right. Like, you're doing something. And I couldn't find... the strength, I think, because of everything that I had just gone through, to ask her and be like, is everything okay? Like, are you using, you know, you want to ask, but I just didn't have the strength to ask her. And I remember very, very vividly that she was supposed to come on, it was the 10th. So literally this week explains why I remember even more, because this is like, this is like memory lane for me. It was the 10th of April and she was supposed to come watch the kids and she never showed up. And I couldn't figure out. She never not showed up. She was always there when it came to the kids, you know, because she had called the day before and she was like, can I come see the kids? Like, I want to see them. I miss them. Because the weekend before, she was in this weird state and she went off on me and called me like, my mother called me a bitch. She said I was acting like a bitch. And I wasn't. I couldn't even figure out where that came from. And she left. So I get the phone call on the 9th. She asks if she can come watch the kids on the 10th. And I'm like, sure, you know, I have to work anyway. So that works. And I was trying to keep the peace and, okay, maybe she had a bad day or whatever, and try to be forgive and gracious like I was trying to be. And she never showed up. And I was just like, what the heck? And I'm panicking. I'm like, I'm going to be late for work. Like, you don't ever think like the worst. Mm-hmm. And so my grandma, bless her heart, like, she came over and saved the day and she watched the kids for me so I could go to my shift at Mac. And I tried texting my mom and she didn't answer. I'm like, this is really weird. Like, hours had gone by and I had called and left messages. And I'm like, she's not answering my phone call. She's not getting back to me. I feel something's not right. Something happened. You don't ever want to feel like that. Mm-mm. And then it wasn't until that night I still hadn't heard from her. And I started to really, really, like, sickly worry.
Panic.
My brother calls me and he's like, I got a call from, you know, mom's boyfriend, and well, he wasn't really even her boyfriend at the time, but and he said that she's in the hospital. And I was like, what? She had a stroke. And I was like, what? And like, I at the time, I knew of strokes, but I didn't know what they were. And he's like, you know, she had a stroke. Apparently, she's okay. You know, she's in Redmond, but they're going to transport her to Bend. And I'm going to go see her. So why don't you? Because I had the kids, so I didn't have a way to go, you know. And my grandma, you know, this was like almost 10:30, 11 o'clock at night. I would just get done talking to him. And he was like, I'm going to go check on her and I'll let you know how she's doing. And I'm like, okay. So he calls me and she's, you know, she's stable. She's okay. She's able to talk. Apparently they graded the stroke as a mild stroke. And he's like, you know, she'll have recovery and she'll be okay. Why don't you come over in the morning and see her? And I was like, okay. So I'm like rushing like a bat out of hell just to get, because it's my mother. Like, you don't ever want anything bad to happen to your mom. And I get there to the hospital. And the weird thing was, is I get into her room and she's not in there. But my, I forget who, oh, her best friend arrived at the same time that I got there. And we see her on again, off again boyfriend at the time come in frantically. I don't even know if he knew we were in the room. And he's like, this is all my effing fault. This shouldn't have happened. This should be me, not her. And I'm like looking at him because he's like wigging out, like tweaker style. And I don't mean to sound mean like that, but it's the only thing that makes sense. And I was like, what do you mean it's your fault? Like, why would you say that? And he sees me and it was like a deer in the headlights. And he left. And I looked at her best friend and I was like, what's going on? So they roll her back in, and it was so hard for me to see my mom because, you know, she had permanent damage to her left side. So her face was all sagging. She didn't really have a lot of movement. And apparently we found out he waited 14 hours before taking her to the hospital.
Jesus. Why?
With her first symptoms of the stroke. Well, I didn't understand why. Like, why would you wait that long? But the only thing I could think of is guilt. Something you were doing.
We thought he would get in trouble.
Yeah. Because she was with she was with him and a few other friends.
And they are doing drugs, I'm assuming.
And
meth, for sure.
Was it?
It has to be. Yeah, that's what the scabs
literally
come
like
from.
Yeah. And so I think the hardest thing for me, I didn't know that at the time. I didn't know that at the time. I'm talking to my mom and I'm just like, how are you? Like, looking at her and I'm trying not to get upset. You know, that's a hard thing to see your mom go from a very active person to this. And the doctor's trying to explain to me, you know, she's going to be okay. She had a mild stroke, you know, so it's going to take some rehabilitation, but she'll be able to leave here probably in the next week, maybe two. Great. You know, that's great. And it was hard because I remember the nurse, the rehabilitation nurse was coming in and I go in to see her again. So I left for a few minutes to let them do her thing and them just turning her head to the left. You know, because I'll never forget like certain images like that I was seeing in these moments, because these moments are they're hard. They're hard to process. And, you know, she looked at me with her eyes and she was like, who is that? And she goes, that's Kiri. You know, and I like lost it.
Yeah.
Like, she's having to relearn things. Like, this is ridiculous. Like, what happened? And I started to get upset and I started to get mad. I'm like, not only am I going through, you know, the divorce was just being finalized. Going through that, like, why is this happening? Why? And my grandparents, her parents get there and her boyfriend, he was very, very mad that they were there. Extremely upset that they arrived. And I had my kids come see her because that was her world. You know, I'm like, if anything, this is going to help her recovery. And so we're there, we're hanging out and they... Her boyfriend at the time, I don't even like saying that. I just want to call him you-know-who. He and my grandmother start arguing because my grandmother is like, as soon as she's out, we're going to take her because they live in Idaho. And we're going to, you know, we're going to take her and we're going to get her back to health. He's like, no, you're not. I'm going to take care of her. My grandmother just went off. She's like,
well, yeah,
absolutely not. Like, you're the reason she's here. Like, this isn't happening. You're not going to have any responsibility when it comes to her recovery. And so he got mad. And then I remember very quickly the nurse said, okay, we have to give her a suppository, so can everybody please leave? And We're like, okay, well, we might as well just go home because it's getting late, you know. And the kids gave her a hug and a kiss. Bye. And I gave her a hug and a kiss. And I said, I'll see you tomorrow. And I remember as I'm walking out, he is not leaving. He is leaning up against this counter with his arms crossed like this, staring at every single one of us that are leaving. Like he has like this power, this control. Because their relationship was abusive too.
Right.
And he's watching. I'm like, why? He said, everybody. Like, you ain't no one special. Mm-hmm. Like, she's my mother. If anything, I should be able to be in here. And her mother should be able to be in here. You need to go.
Mm-hmm.
And so he just stayed in there and watched us all walk out. And I just got this really bad feeling. Like, something's not right. Because the entire time he was there, he would get in her ear and whisper things to her. He would never talk to her out loud. Never, what? Like, speak to her out loud.
That's
he would
weird.
Get in her ear and he would whisper. Almost as if he was trying to keep something secret. And so it wasn't until that next morning, this was the 13th, it was the 12th of April, and I got a phone call from the doctor at 7:30 in the morning, and they said, is this Kiri? And I was like, yes. They're like, the daughter of, you know, Kimberly. Like, yes. And they're like, this is Dr. So-and-so. I forget what he even said. He's like, and I have some really bad news for you. And I was like, okay. And he was like, your mom stroked a second time last night. She has a 20% chance of survival. I need you to make a choice on what you need me to do for her. And I was like,
oh my gosh.
What? He goes, he said, it happened at 5:30 this morning. I have someone here by the name of this. And he's saying he's her husband. And he's trying to tell me to not give her anything and to just let her go.
Man, are you freaking out?
Oh my God, I didn't even know like what to think, say, do. I'm like, wait a minute, I just talked to her. Mm-hmm. What do you mean she stroked a second time? What do you mean he's trying to call shots and say he's her husband? He's never been her husband. And I was almost like shocked. Like you don't know how to process something like that. And I have goosebumps right now too. And so I told my grandparents and we were just in this like, we need to go now. He's like, I need you to get the hospital now. Like if you don't get here now, like, something's going to happen. So we get to the hospital and he's there with all her stuff. And my grandma goes, you get the hell out of here now. And he calls, you know, her an F and B and walks out and flips out. And it's the last time I saw him. And my mom was in ICU and she had the stroke put her in a coma. So going from being able to talk to her to she's in a coma, she can't respond to you. You can, you know, talk to her, but these are her options. And I guess apparently because, you know, the eldest child is the one that is apparently responsible for choices made. And I didn't know that. You don't think of things like that. You don't want to think of things like that. And I told my grandma, I was like, I can't do this. I can't be the one to make this choice. We're all here as a family and I need you to help.
Mm-hmm.
We all need to come together and figure out what to do. Because they're like, okay, one, we can remove the right cranial completely off. And, you know, this will happen. She has a better chance of survival. Two, you could give her, you know, these medications that will reduce the swelling, you know, and she may have that chance of survival. Or two, you know, just let it happen. And I'm like, I'm not just going to let it happen. He goes, but the problem is, you know, your mom's stroke is so severe that even if she was to come to, she wouldn't be here. She wouldn't be able to do anything.
What a hard choice, like, that you have to make that.
Oh, absolutely. And hearing the doctor say that, I mean, these are things that you see on a movie, television show. Like, you don't ever, like, put yourself in a situation like this. And, you know, I went in there and I talked to her and it was so hard because she's not awake.
Mm-hmm.
But any time that I mentioned the kids' names to her, she could blow bubbles. So it's almost like she kind of knew, but she didn't. You'd almost want her to, like, pretend maybe she hears you.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was tired. It had been a long day and I knew that the doctors were taking good care of her. And the next day rolls around and we're at the hospital some more and they were going to move her up to the third floor. And because, you know, they said the medication, you know, may be working. And long story short, like, I remember my aunt calling me frantically, and you don't want to get a frantic call from your aunt. She's like, you need to get here now. Your mom, you know, they got her up to the third floor. Your mom's not breathing well. That doesn't look good. And I'm thinking, what? Like, this isn't happening. Like, she was supposed to be okay. Like, this isn't happening. And so everything you could think of was stopping me from getting to the hospital. Like, you can't just get there to the hospital because you have cars in the way, you have slow drivers, you have blocked in by this person. And I remember, like, hauling into the hospital and running, just running as fast as my legs could carry me. And I get in the elevator and there's my aunt. I'm like, oh my gosh. She runs into the room and then I see just everybody around my mom just crying. I'm like, what's going on? Like, this is not happening. Mm-hmm. And people like part so I could get up to her left side. And I see my brother across from me and I'm watching my mom. Like, she was almost like respirating. She wasn't breathing well. Like, she was shallow breathing and she'd stop. And I was like, this is happening. Mm-hmm. Like, this is really happening. And my mom isn't going to make it. Like, those things were going through my head. So what would I say? What would I say? What would God want me to say? Like, I said, I forgive you, mm-hmm. you know, because the doctors had told us earlier that they found methamphetamines in her system. And that was probably one of the reasons why she stroked a second time, you know, had induced, well, the stroke the first time, but especially for the second time. And that's why I said, I forgive you. Mm-hmm. None of us are perfect. You know, we all make mistakes. And I just said, you know, if you need to go, go. And I kid you not, just looking at her, a tear from her left side of her eye fell down her cheek. And then I'm watching my brother and I'm looking at her and he's like, Mom, you know, go be with Jesus. And a right tear came.
No way.
Yes. A right tear came from her right side. And it wasn't even 30 seconds later, she stopped breathing. And the nurse pronounced her, you know, that she had passed. And I remember just crouching like a baby and just crying out, Mama, like, mm-hmm. why? You know, I just watched my mom pass away. Like, those are things you would never wish on anybody. Like, mm-hmm. those are things that stick in your head, like the smells, the sounds, the everything. And I had to come to reality that she wasn't going to be here anymore. Mm-hmm. And when I said earlier, like, this is the week. Her 6th anniversary is on Saturday. So these next few days for me are kind of like, whoo, they're a lot.
Reliving a lot, yeah.
It's totally reliving. But I do remember, like, after watching her pass, like, this peace came over me. It was the craziest thing to ever, like, experience. And it was almost like God was reassuring me, or even she was reassuring me, like, I'm okay. Mm-hmm. I'm okay. And it's like, that's so hard because here she was helping me take care of my kids. We're reestablishing our relationship. She gets back with this guy. They do this. And this is the reason she's no longer here, because of drugs. Mm-hmm. And I was just like, this is just ridiculous. Like,
I bet that's really hard. Like, to think that your parent is on drugs.
Oh, absolutely. You can't understand it either.
Right.
I mean, you have grandkids.
It's very confusing.
It is very confusing, mm-hmm. you know, and that whole week was, I'm telling you, when they say things come in threes, things were coming at me left and right. Like, 3 days after she passed, you know, I'm trying to get the memorial together and I'm trying to grieve and I'm trying to tell my kids, you know, all of these things. You don't ever, like, put yourself in those shoes. And I get a call, you know, the house sold, because the house was, you know, for sale. And so the house sold. You have 2 weeks to move. I'm like, oh my God, this is not happening. Like, okay. And then not even the next day, my dog gets sick.
No.
My dog I had for 8 years. That was like my baby before my babies. She gets sick and we have to put her down.
No.
Yes. And watching her go through the same thing from breathing to not breathing, and my brother was there, was just like, this is not happening. Like, what is going on with my life? Mm-hmm. This is ridiculous. And then, you know, the ex coming in, and I was like, I have stuff I have to go do this weekend to take care of, so I still have a job. Unfortunately, there's things that were mandatory, you know. Mm-hmm. And just being told that I was a selfish bitch. 3 days after my mom, in the midst of all of it, I was like, this is not happening. So I had to tell my brother, like, I need you. Mm-hmm. I need you. And he was my rock. My brother was my rock. And we got through it. It was hard, but we got through it, you know?
So I want to pause
yeah. right there place.
For this first episode. And I know I want our listeners to come back for her second episode, because if you guys think that that was as bad as it gets, it's not it.
No.
So And we do this at every show, and I know this is emotional and stuff, but sometimes we just need to just talk about something just for a moment. And we are going to go to our question of the day.
The two posh girls ask the question of the day.
Well, today's question of the day is, what is the worst job you have ever had?
Oh, no.
I'm just curious, going first. Does our guest go first?
Yeah.
Worst job. Oh, my God. Wow.
Damn good question.
Worst job. You're going to make me think back. I've done a lot of things. I don't know.
I'll tell you. I know exactly what my worst job was ever. I mean, I've had a couple that were worse, but this one was the worst. This in the time of my life where I was going through a divorce from Marcella's dad. And, you know, everyone knows I was a mafia princess at the time. I lived like, you know, in the white mansion, and money is never a problem, and I have kids, and now I'm trying to get back in the workforce, and I don't even know where to go. I was always a stay-at-home mom, so I don't even know where to start. And not to drag this out too long, I'm going to tell a story when I tell my mafia story, but someone told me someone is looking to hire at Gregory's at the Galleria Mall, which was a very upscale, amazing boutique, and I was like, oh, I like pretty things, I love pretty clothes, so I can do that, that's gonna be a blast. Well, the owner of that store was the most awful human being that I've ever met in my whole entire life. Like, when he interviewed me, he immediately wanted to hire me, and I had said I have two children, the only thing, I will work whenever I can, but my daughter is into dance, my son is into tennis, I would really like to still be at the competitions and tournaments and whatnot. And he pretended that that was okay. And the first time I asked him not to put me on the schedule, he did it exactly when I asked not to be put on the schedule. And then he tried to hook me up with some of his wealthy clients. And I am just not that kind of person. So he got mad. And he started like degrading me, like waiting whenever a rich woman would come in, he would call me over, he would make me get their shoes, and he would make me get on the ground on my knees and put their shoes on. Like, it was just something he had, I don't know, whatever was going on in his head. Needless to say, I was there 2 weeks only. I quit after 2 weeks, and you know what else? I mean, this sounds really stupid today, but I never even took the check. I didn't want their money, I didn't want anything. Which I'm like, that was so dumb because I was struggling for money. I should have gotten it, but I never did.
I'd be like, thank you, goodbye.
Yeah. So that was my worst job in my life.
I think mine was not this, that it's a bad job, but I think it is going back to bartending after like losing a business. Like, I did that when I was younger, like early 20s, which is fun and fine and a perfect time to do it. And then you open your own business and you think you're kind of doing everything right, and then all crashes, and then you go back to that. And I did that two nights. I was like, oh, fuck that. I'll go back to teaching. And,
I mean, someone great gave you an opportunity, but that wasn't
it wasn't that. It was the whole, like, what am I doing? Like, at my age, I shouldn't be going back.
For some reason, female bartenders have a shelf life where male bartenders don't seem to.
I agree with that. And I think too, there's some people who do it like as a career. Like, mm-hmm. I do know some female and male especially, like, they have done it forever. They have mm-hmm. great clientele. They actually make really, really, really mm-hmm. good money and they've built themselves up. But I think for me, it almost felt like, and everyone you're working with is very young and you're mm-hmm. like, I don't know how I got back here. Like, I feel like I went back 10 years.
Oh, I'm so glad I'm in here now and not having to DJ for money
anymore.
Yeah, it's just it is like hanging around kids all the time.
Well,
that's
you're in that club
like.
Scene and then you know, you remember, you're like, oh my gosh, I forgot that when it closes, you're still trying to kick out the drunk asshole and you're like, please go home. And you're not getting home till 5 a.m. and the whole, you know, cocktail bartender thing at in your 30s is kind of, if you haven't done it as a career, you've already had your own business and you feel like successful stuff and to go back there. I was like, I cannot believe I'm back here. No way.
Have you thought of USC?
I have. I would probably say, and it sounds really silly, but like I was in the, I worked for a tanning salon. And I think the reason it's probably one of my worst jobs is because you see the behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
You see just things that are disgusting.
And I cannot even imagine.
I don't want to as a tanner, like I'm assuming, I'm not a tanner, but you go in there and you're like, oh, this is a nice bed. But it's like, did you see it before when, you know, Sally Sue was in it for 20 minutes and there was a puddle just chilling there.
Oh. Gross.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's pretty gross.
I've heard of some, well, one of my students, I won't say who it is, but she got so nervous in the spray tan, she peed.
Oh, my, oh my gosh.
So I think that might happen too. People might pee their pants.
I've never heard that before.
Wow. How about you, Spider?
Oh, I worked as a drug prevention counselor for little kids. I hated that job.
Oh my gosh.
But
that's
I'm the opposite of Marcella. I can't stand working with kids.
Yeah.
Runner up though, I worked at Chick-fil-A for 3 days.
Oh. Isn't it funny that you never last in it? Like you're like, oh, 2 days.
Yeah. I did the drug prevention counseling for like 3 months, I think. I just say me working with kids is not a good idea.
You know what's funny? I just edited our episode about the pet peeves of airline passengers. And Spider goes,
kids.
The kids bother me the most. Yep. That's really funny.
It really is. I love kids that I know and are like kids of my friends.
Yeah.
Love the shit out of them. The rest of the kids can go fuck off.
The funny thing is I don't mind working with kids. I don't like all kids though.
Yeah. I can see that.
Go away.
You know, work generally I can separate work from personal, but when it comes to kids, they just drive me crazy.
And I don't mind the kids at my work. I don't want to be around kids sometimes in like a normal, like, you know, like the play place at the mall. Mm-hmm. I'm like, ugh, go away. Good guy. Like I walk back. Like I'm around them so much. I don't want to be outside of that.
Random. That's funny. Okay. Time to call Miss Polly.
Oh, right. Yay.
Do we play the thing first?
No, let's get her on the phone first, and then
we'll
once,
do it.
Once, yeah.
Yeah, let her hear it, too.
Oh, yeah.
I love this.
My jam. So loud, though.
Hello.
Miss
Polly!
Hi!
Hi! We're going to play your jingle real quick.
Okay.
Oh, wait. I muted the last one. Hold on. There we go.
This is Penis and Pussy Talk
with Miss Polly.
All right.
Isn't that perfect?
Oh, my God.
I love that she has a British accent.
I know. This is Penis and Pussy Talk.
Hey, Miss Polly, we wanted to ask you today about sexual abuse in marriage. What is that all about?
Well, sexual abuse in marriage is actually more common, unfortunately, than people think. So that's when your spouse will use coercion or threats or withhold affection, withhold money to get something that they want sexually.
Oh.
Forced sex, rape happens.
Yeah, I think like, people don't think that.
Yeah.
Because they're married, that's not rape.
Yeah, it's not rape because, well, here's the thing. Like if I coerced somebody by bullying them and hounding them for something, and eventually, either they say, yes, fine, here. So the guilt starts in that, oh, well, I did say yes, even though they were coerced or bullied to do it.
Right. It's like a negotiator. Bigger, you know.
Of course, absolutely. Manipulation, coercion. I'm going to not let you out of the house. I'm not going to give you any gas money because you won't give me a blowjob right now.
Oh my gosh.
So I'm going to be hateful to you because you're not going to.
I read this somewhere too, where men just like try to have sex with their wife while they're asleep, which is like,
what the hell?
Yeah, I swear to God, that's a thing.
Like, I think I need a participant, not a doll.
What'd you say, Miss Molly?
I said, well, yeah, sure. I'm horny. I have a hard on. I'm just going to slip it on in, you know?
That doesn't even sound fun. And
no,
the
it doesn't.
Poor, like, other person, yeah. Like, that makes it even worse. Mm-hmm. Like, this is the worst thing ever. Can't even imagine that.
Well, yeah. Can you imagine? Imagine this, because this is an experience that I heard about from the person. The wife was undergoing cancer treatment, chemotherapy, radiation, the whole nine yards, you know, not feeling her best. And yet her husband would demand continual sexual relations, regardless of whether or not she was sick. Ugh. And undergoing this horrific treatment.
You know what, Miss Polly, this sounds like almost like we should do a whole episode on this. What do you think?
There's a lot of subject matter that could make up an entire show. Yes, I agree.
I think we need to do that when you come back in town and have you on the show and do a whole episode on this. I think it's important. It's important for women to differentiate what's right and what's wrong.
Well, and also I feel like what has happened to like men respecting like the woman, or like where, like we need to talk about that too. Absolutely. I mean, what is going on? I just feel like that's so, just because you have a penis does not mean you get to demand what you like you do with my body.
Yes, and let's talk about it in the religious community as well as being more prevalent.
Oh, I bet. Uh-huh. Wow, I can't wait to do that. And I thank you so much, Miss Polly, and I know you're moving.
Happy moving.
Yes, happy moving, and we love you.
And we'll call you about five more times.
Bye.
Bye.
Kiri, why don't you give your social media handles so people can get in touch with you? I know you're an incredible makeup artist.
Oh, thank you. So I have on Facebook and Instagram, it's Beauty by Kiri, KYRIE, all one word pretty much.
And she's an amazing makeup artist.
Yes, really, really great. And if anyone needs help or if anyone wants to reach out to you.
Absolutely.
Then you are available, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you everyone for listening.
Thank you.
If you like our show, you can follow us on all social media handles. Two Posh Podcast is on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter, as well as Two Posh Boutique is on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. And my personal Instagram is Gabby Talks, and my Facebook is Gabrielle Kendall Gilmore. So reach out to us and here's Marcella's social media handles.
Also, our podcast is on all podcast networks that you can find. You can find me on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, Snapchat at Marcella Ranieri. Nothing really creative. My first and last name, MarcellaRaneri.
And Two Posh Podcast is also on YouTube. We have our own YouTube channel.
Leighton Fields, y'all be sure to subscribe to the podcast. My Instagram is Leighton Fields Music, spelled LEIGHTONFIELDS Music. Leighton Fields Music on Facebook, Leighton Fields on Snapchat. Y'all get at me.
Miss Polly.
Yes, you can follow me on Instagram at PR by Polly. My Twitter handle is Miss Polly Sex EDU.
Hey, beautiful everyone, thank you for listening. Subscribe to our channel, subscribe to podcast
YouTube.
And YouTube,
you can see us all.
Yeah, and you, everyone have a wonderful day.